This is In Focus, featuring interviews with our local newsmakers, information on community programs and politics, and the story on local current events. In Focus on Lake 88.
Good afternoon, I'm Linda Dow. It's hard to describe today's guest in just one sentence. He's been called Canada's Indiana Jones and declared the greatest living explorer by Canadian Geographic. Adam Schultz is a professional explorer, historian, and writer, amongst other things. And he canoes alone across this country in the interest of preserving our natural world. It's a pleasure to welcome Adam Schultz. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Linda.
Nice of you to join us when you're so busy exploring this country. Now, you've just returned from a solo expedition, 3,400 kilometers by canoe. You know, my first thought is, why, when most people wouldn't dream of doing something like that?
Well, I suppose we all try to do what we love, and that's what I love.
Well, how long did it take you?
That was 3 months.
3 months.
3 months,
Did you always want to be an explorer when you were young?
Well, when I was really young, I don't think I even knew what an explorer was, but I always loved the outdoors. I loved being in the woods. I mean, I was lucky. I grew up in rural Ontario, so around my family home, it was nothing but forest. And pretty much every chance I got, I was out in the woods with my brother and my dog, exploring things. And I guess I never really changed. You know, 30 years later, I'm still doing the exact same thing. Except now, instead of exploring the woods behind my family home, I'm going a little farther afield to some of the most remote and wild places left on planet Earth.
So talk a bit about this latest expedition.
Yeah, so I was actually living on Lake Erie, and from out my front porch window, I saw a bird fly across the sky, and I recognized it from my earlier adventures in Canada's Arctic. It was a peregrine falcon. And peregrine falcons, besides being one of the coolest birds on Earth, they just so happen to migrate every year from Lake Erie all the way to Canada's Arctic. So kind of spontaneously, I just looked out the window, saw the falcon, and said, well, why not try to follow the falcon from Lake Erie to the Arctic? You know, get my canoe, get my backpack, and just go. So that's exactly what I did, kind of an old-fashioned adventure. And I ended up paddling and hiking 3,400 kilometers all the way from Long Point on Lake Erie right up to the Costa Ungava Bay in the Arctic, and it was quite the adventure.
And this is all alone. It's hard to believe. Do you have anybody tracking you when you do these things?
Well, my wife sort of follows me as best as she can, but for a lot of that journey, I mean, even today in the year 2022, I'm completely beyond the reach of cell reception, Wi-Fi, you name it, so I can be off the grid for weeks at a time, and communications is a little bit patchy, to say the least.
You've been called fearless. Do you think of yourself as brave?
Well, I don't know. I'm definitely not fearless. I mean, I can tell you when I've got a polar bear swimming underneath my canoe, I'm pretty terrified. Or when there's huge, like, storms, you know, tornadoes, thunder and lightning, you name it, Arctic ice floes. Freezing cold water, some pretty massive whitewater rapids, you know, paddling them in your canoe, it sounds like thunder all around you with waterfalls and rapids. That sort of thing, it's pretty white knuckle to experience, so I would say I'm far from fearless. I guess the key is just trying to stay calm and kind of level-headed when you're going through any of those situations so you can deal with it and hopefully, with a little bit of luck, live to tell the story.
And I suppose some of that fear is useful in actually survival and protecting yourself, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing expeditions and adventures for a long time for the Royal Canadian Geographical Society and other sponsors. And one thing I've learned over the years of doing adventures, especially solo, alone in the wilderness, is that I really don't like, you know, the adrenaline junkies or that term. I think that you have to be a little bit cautious if you want to survive any of these adventures. So whenever I'm in one of those situations in the wilderness, I always try to err on the side of caution. Like if I'm coming down a river and I can see a canyon up ahead, I'll try to portage or go around the canyon rather than go through it in my canoe. If there's a storm coming on the horizon, I'll make camp and try to put my tent in the safest place I can find, which admittedly, sometimes on the Arctic tundra is not that safe, but any sort of low-lying ground, I'll head to that. So I try to minimize the risks and the dangers that I face on any of my adventures or journeys, but at the end of the day, sometimes you have to take some degree of risk, right?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, what is the worst for you? Is it the physical challenge or the mental one, being alone out there for that long?
Well, they're both something to face, a challenge. I mean, on the physical side, it's hard to get away from the hunger, right? If you're traveling for thousands of kilometers under your own power, you're going to feel the calories that you're burning. I mean, there's just no way to eat enough not to be hungry. So that's a physical challenge that you have to learn to deal with day after day, week after week, month after month. Inevitably, you're going to lose a lot of weight on any of these journeys. You can try to catch as much fish as you want, gather as many wild berries and plants as you want, but it'll never be enough to make up for all of the hunger you're going to experience, especially, you know, when temperatures are cold, which they were on my most recent journey, even at night inside your tent when you're in a sleeping bag, because it's cold, your body is just burning calories just to stay warm. So, yeah, you're constantly burning calories. But having said that, I would say the mental side really is the tougher of the two. And, you know, mentally, you just have to try to stay motivated every day because the days can be very long. You know, when I'm traveling, it can be 13 hours, 14 hours, even 15 hours in a canoe at a stretch. And when the weather is bad, that's when it gets rough. Or when the bugs are bad, you know, just storm clouds and black flies and mosquitoes, there's a part of you that can say, why not just throw in the towel? Why not quit? Why not turn around and head for home? But figure out ways. And not go back.
Broke up
so,
there
yeah.
a little bit. I just don't know how you deal with that, going for such long periods of time without seeing or speaking to another human being.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky. I mean, I don't mind the solitude so much, but what really drives me and keeps me going and sort of keeping everything in perspective is that I really love exploring. You know, places I've never been before, especially the wild places, like the true wilderness, not knowing what's on the other side of the mountain or around the next bend in the river. To me, that's a really exhilarating feeling.
And that keeps you going.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like the thought that, you know, around the next bend, I could see a pack of Arctic wolves or a herd of caribou crossing this river, or really just the land itself, like ancient mountains and even more ancient rocks, majestic waterfalls. These are the sorts of things that I love. And keeping that in perspective, you know, I try to say I'm a lucky guy. I get to do what I love doing. I mean, this is the dream I had when I was 7 years old in the backyard, and I consider myself pretty fortunate that I get to do this as a career. So I try to look in the grand scheme of things and say, you know, it's tough having wet socks and being hungry and putting in long days, but at the end of the day, it's worth it, and I'm glad that I'm here. And when I sort of look at it from that perspective, take a step back, I usually have a smile on my face, and that motivates me to keep going.
You know, it must be a big challenge for you preparing for a three-month journey. What are some of the things you have to consider?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of logistics behind it all. I have to think of my calories, how am I going to get food, and more importantly, how am I going to carry that food? There's only so much you can fit in a backpack or in a canoe. What kind of circumstances am I going to face, any sort of medical situations, how am I going to be able to deal with them? Because I have to be self-sufficient. There's no one who's going to be coming to rescue me. I'm in very remote places, so I have to be able to handle any kind of contingency that could arise. Just the route planning is complicated. I'm often, you know, poring over outdated topographic maps or looking at satellite imagery, trying to get any sort of sense of what the terrain is like. You know, is it swampy? Is it muskeg? Is it bog? Is it going to be possible to walk through there? Is it just going to be like quicksand? Am I going to sink down in there, especially if I'm carrying heavy loads? You know, what is it like? Is it a spruce forest, or is it going to be like a jungle of alders and willows, almost impenetrable? Will I need a machete to get through there? Or is the landscape more rocky? So I'm always trying to figure out these things in advance. I mean, yes, there's a lot of planning that would go into any of these expeditions, but that's something I really enjoy, you know, planning and dreaming up adventures, looking at maps.
I'm just wondering what you do if you get sick one day, or what would happen if you broke your arm or sprained your ankle or something? What do you do?
Well, knock on wood. I mean, I've done close to 100 expeditions now in Canada's wilderness, usually
have
an average
really?
Of about... Yeah, well, I average about 5 a year, and I'm 36, and I've been doing this for almost 20 years. I mean, I was pretty lucky that I got a head start on my career and that I figured out at a time when most of my friends didn't know what they wanted to do with their lives. I always knew that, you know, I wanted to do these kind of adventures. So I've been going at it pretty long, and I've never had any injury of any kind on any expedition. I've never had anything that would stop me from getting out of my tent in the morning and getting in my canoe and keep going. You know, I get lots of cuts and scrapes and bruises and things, and I've been a little bit woozy from so many black fly bites, losing so much blood, especially in the subarctic where the bugs are, well, they're the worst on planet Earth. I mean, northern Canada has the highest concentration of blood-sucking insects on planet Earth. But other than that, I've never had any kind of injury or sickness ever. And I think part of that just comes down to planning and erring on the side of caution, as I mentioned before. So, yeah, I think through everything, and I always come up with contingency plans. So a few years ago, I did a 4,000-kilometer journey alone across the Arctic. And on that journey, I was constantly thinking, you know, traveling across these boulder fields, if I slip and twist my ankle, what am I going to do? And I would usually have a backup plan where it's like, okay, I'm not going to make my 4,000-kilometer journey across the Arctic from west to east, but I don't have to give up. I can actually go to this river, and the current is such that I'll be able to mostly drift or travel at an easy pace downriver, and it'll take me to the nearest inhabited place, the nearest community, where I can end my journey and get out of here. Now, I never had to do that, but those are the kind of backup plans that I always have at the back of my mind in case something like that should happen. But, you know, fundamentally, mentally, when I go into any of these expeditions, I'm sort of prepared to deal with any situation that might arise, and I think that that's kind of crucial, right? You have to be prepared for the worst. You know, you hope for the best, but you have to be prepared for any situation. And as I said, knock on wood, so far so good on all of my adventures.
What's the most exhilarating thing that you experienced on a trip?
Well, I mean, there are many, many things that come to mind. Sometimes just the solitude. I mean, in a world of 8 billion people, to still be able to travel for weeks and not see a single person, or even a single sign of civilization, is a pretty special feeling. I mean, I love that sense of wide open space that you can climb to the top of a hill or a ridge and look out as far as the eye can see. And there's nothing there, just wilderness, not a single human-made object on the horizon. That, to me, is a pretty special feeling in the 21st century.
Yes, it must be.
Of our world we know is not like that. But maybe if I really thought about it, it would probably be getting to look an Arctic wolf in the eye face to face. I've been lucky to have a few encounters with them up close. And to me, I mean, wolves are the most majestic animal. There's something about them that just symbolizes true wilderness. And I've crossed paths with dozens of them on my various adventures. So that to me is maybe the most special feeling out of all my expeditions.
And what's been the scariest thing for you?
Well, polar bears are pretty terrifying. I mean, they're really the top of the food chain. So when you have a 1,000-pound polar bear growling at you or coming at you, or when they're in the water, I mean, they can swim so fast, they can go underneath your canoe, they can swim faster than it's possible to paddle. That one of the things that comes to mind is terrifying. But on the other hand, I've had many close calls getting swept over a waterfall, suffering hypothermia, climbing a mountain in a snowstorm, all those sorts of things. I've featured in my books, and they've all been terrifying when I've gone through them. And sometimes just the wind.
Right.
You can have 100-kilometer-an-hour wind gusts, and when you're in a canoe or in a tent, that is terrifying. I mean, many times I'm far from land, canoeing in the Arctic and places like that. Inevitably, you have to go far from land in between bays and things,
right.
And that can be terrifying when there's wind that you're battling or waves or there's a storm coming. All those things can be pretty frightening to have to deal with.
I would imagine. You've written books about your expeditions, and your writing's been described as gripping, riveting, chilling, a page turner. How does a woodsy outdoor guy get to be an accomplished writer as well?
Well, it's probably because I spend so much time alone, spending months by myself.
Okay.
My only companions are sometimes books, so I get a lot of time to read. And I keep a journal on all my adventures, and those journals are the basis for my books. So
okay.
I like to think that has something to do with it, but that's something I really enjoy, spending as much time exploring as I do. When I write my books, I really like to sort of paint a scene in words. So I put a lot of emphasis on describing my campsites or the portages or the paddling, try to put the reader in my shoes or in my boots so that they can get a taste of what it was actually like to be there. And as I said, that's something I enjoy.
Can you give us just a quick, we don't have too much time left, but just a quick overview of your books, some of the titles for us?
Yeah, I've written four books. My first book, Alone Against the North, is about exploring unmapped rivers and trying not to get eaten by polar bears. I wrote a history book called The History of Canada in 10 Maps, which is quite popular. And it's less about the maps and the flesh and blood characters, but basically retracing the routes of past explorers like David Thompson, Alexander Mackenzie, Samuel D. Champlain, and bringing their stories to life. Beyond the Trees is my journey alone across Canada's Arctic. That's that book. And my most recent book, which is actually my favorite, is perfect for the October season. It's a little bit spooky. That was a different adventure of anything I've ever done before. It was actually more of a detective case where I was going out into the mountains of Labrador trying to look for the ruins of an old fur trade post from a century ago and solve a mystery connected with it. So that's The Whisper on the Night Wind, and that's my newest book.
Okay, well, we'll look for those books. And you're right to use the word spooky, because someone has described some of your writing as spooky. I can hardly wait to dig into some of it, especially around Halloween.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've been elected a fellow of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society for extraordinary contribution to geography. That's quite an honor. Congratulations for that.
Well, yes.
Can you talk a bit about that for just a minute or so?
Yep. Well, I was elected a fellow back in 2013, so 9 years ago. But 4 years ago, the Royal Canadian Geographical Society named me Explorer in Residence, and I'm still Explorer in Residence today. I'm now Westaway Explorer in Residence. So it's a pretty cool job description because it means doing expeditions is literally my full-time job, and that's what I do for the Royal Canadian Geographical Society. The expeditions range from mapping rivers to tracking down some of the rarest animals on the planet, endangered birds and other species, to sometimes just doing long journeys like 4,000 kilometers across the Arctic or 3,400 kilometers from Lake Erie, climbing mountains, I mean, doing a huge variety of things, sometimes, you know, looking for the ruins of archaeological sites or old fur trade posts. But that's what I do, and that's what I write about in my books.
What concerns you most about our environment?
I think it's the loss of wild places. I mean, environmental issues, there's many different ones, but that's the one that I think is really going to affect us almost on a psychological level. I mean, I think everyone kind of needs green spaces within walking distance of their doorstep, but that's something that's disappearing at an alarming rate all over the world. And if there's one issue that I hope, you know, if people read my books, besides the adventure stories and all the hair-raising escapes, I hope that I leave readers with maybe a deeper appreciation or a new appreciation of the value of wild places, so that maybe, just maybe, especially among young readers, young Canadians, there'll be a desire there to do more to preserve those wild places so that we still have them years and decades from now.
Adam, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and for taking the time to be with us. And unfortunately, we're out of time. So, yes, maybe we'll talk again sometime. And good luck with all your adventures. We'll look for your new book coming out on your latest expedition. I would imagine you're going to write a book about that, right?
Yep, October 2023 is when it'll be out.
It'll be out, October 2023. Sounds good. We'll be looking for that. Adam, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Linda.
You're very welcome. I've been speaking with Adam Schultz about his solo canoe journeys across Canada. You can learn more about Adam and his incredible journeys at adamschultz.com. I'm Linda Dow. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.